Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan. Thanks so much for joining us here on the program. We're certainly glad that you have availed yourself of taking some time to listen to this broadcast that comes your way on Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., and then we podcast. The podcasts are basically available for you to listen to at SoundCloud, iTunes, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher, Spotify. I said TuneIn Radio, and we're expanding, but they're also available on the homepage and the radio shows page of richarddugan.com. So we encourage you to check out these podcasts. You have no idea how far beyond the 50 minutes that we might have gone as far as the podcast is concerned. So you're going to want to go to the podcast, and some people might be using that as a lure to get you to buy something. No, we're not even asking you to buy the concepts that our guests provide. We're just asking you to listen, consider the possibilities, and see if maybe it might work for you. If it doesn't, then don't use it, please. I mean, it would be like me as a little kid eating Brussels sprouts because I was told they were good for me, whether I liked them or not. If I hated them, but because of my training and upbringing, well, they're good for me. So no matter how bad they taste, I'm going to eat them. We don't want you to do that. So with that said, we also would like to know if you enjoy these broadcasts, if they resonate with you and you'd like to support us financially. We do have a Patreon account as well as a PayPal account if you'd like to support us. You can go to the links on the homepage and provide a little donation if you can. We are not nonprofit, so bear that in mind. And also, we ask you to go to our guest website. There's a little grocery cart on the SoundCloud link that takes you right to our guest's website. We set all of that up. Today's program, I think you are going to enjoy. I know that I am. I may be in my second and final relationship. At least, let me just put it this way. There is no way I'm going to start over with anybody new because, first of all, I love the woman that I'm with. And second of all, it's just so darn hard to start over. I went through a 15-year marriage. My guest is going to, we're going to talk a little bit about that as well as other types of relationships with my guest, the author of Safe to Love Again, and Gary, and it's Salier. Thank you so much for joining us on the program.
Thank you, Richard, for having me here.
This is very difficult for a lot of people to deal with because relationships are very important to us, right? I mean, it's like one of the key components of just getting through day-to-day life.
Oh, they absolutely are. And they've gotten, I think, more complex and more difficult in the last 50 years for a lot of reasons, and not the least of which is we have different and higher expectations than before. Before, good enough would have been fine, but we're really expecting real heartfelt connections, and the internet obviously didn't make it easier when there's so many choices out there, and it's confusing to a lot of people.
Absolutely. And on top of that, I mean, you could layer that with this whole aspect, and we've been dealing with this for decades as far as psychology, if you will, pop self-help and pop psychology. We went through this is how I look at it. In the 80s, we were going through various programs and ideas that, well, it's our parents' fault that we are the way we are. Okay? So we had somebody to blame. We didn't have to take responsibility. And in the 90s, we started to do that. We started to realize that it's not our parents' fault, but it's because of the way that we were raised and the way we were taught that we are the way that we are. Our parents did the best they could. So we take them out of the equation, and now it's on me. We've kind of shifted backward a little bit. We're blaming others for our problems. It's them. They did this to us and they did that to us. And the firm reality is that we've done all of this to ourselves. But the catch is that we haven't quite figured out yet how to get beyond those things. And that's part of what you're talking about in Safe to Love Again.
Exactly. I mean, what I'm talking about is, there's no doubt that parents play a role in this stuff. Also, exes or just relationships or people you don't even meet. I mean, if you've gotten ghosted five or six times in a row, there's always some part of you that starts doubting your worthiness. And that kind of gets to the central point in the book. You know, whether it's these, that what tells us that we're loved are these four core feelings that we have to feel in our bodies, in our soul, and at the depth of our mind, that we are welcomed with joy, that we have a right to be welcomed with joy, a right to feel worthy and nourished to reach out for your needs, a right to feel cherished and protected. That means I get to be a me, but in a we. I get to have support. I get to have backup. I get to have a safety net, not just a Marlboro mate.
Yeah.
And then we have to feel empowered with choice. These four feelings have been online since you've been one, or they're opposites. Sometimes you don't get those. Sometimes you get unwelcomed, unworthy, uncherished, or disempowered. And the whole point here is we can. It's not about blaming parents. It's about looking at the feelings we were given, either by them or somebody else. And how do we take responsibility for all that in an appropriate way without blaming ourselves so that we can swap them out so our brain can have the feelings that lead to lasting love?
Isn't that one of the first big hurdles is shifting from blaming ourselves to acknowledging that this is the way that I am and these are the choices that I've made. Taking responsibility, difference between blaming and taking responsibility, because taking responsibility isn't blaming. There's a different psychology there, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. And I mean, let's put this in context. About a month and a half ago, I was speaking at an event, and there was a friend of mine who had read the book. And she called over one of her friends and said, oh, you got to meet Dr. Gary here. He just wrote this great book, Faith to Love Again. And the look on her face, she gets this, like she had seen a ghost, and she goes, oh, no, not another person, another book that's going to tell me that I'm wrong, how wrong I am. And I could just see the total feeling of unworthiness. And that's why one of the very first things I say in the book is, no matter what your patterns, no matter how much pain you've been running, that you are worthy of love and that nobody is wrong. Everybody got whatever feelings, whatever patterns in life, they got them naturally. At one time, it was the best deal available. Your brain just took the best deal. Nothing's wrong with your brain. It's just taking the best deal that was not given an expiration date. And the goal is to go back and find out whatever that safety protocol was that, you know, it was safer to not reach out for your needs than to reach out. It was safer to not feel empowered than to feel empowered to have a voice. To find that exact moment and allow your brain to get safe again with it. Mm. And that means setting a sort of an expiration date for all that. Mm.
The book is entitled Safe to Love Again. We encourage you to go to what website would you like our guests to go to, Gary, so that they can find out how to release the pain of past relationships and create the love that you desire? What's the best place for them to go?
Okay, well, the book is on Amazon, but if they go to www.garysalyer.com, SALYER.com, then, you know, there's a link to the book there, and there's also stuff for love notes and videos and all sorts of stuff. So GarySalyer.com, get you every place you need to go.
Because the bottom line is everyone deserves a love that lasts, right?
Absolutely.
Now,
absolutely.
Go ahead.
That is me. I think that is the goal. Nobody wants, it's as you just said, you know, it's just too painful to not have lasting.
Exactly. Now, as I said before, I'm the kind of person, I don't know about you, but I'm the kind of person who loves milestones. Okay. You know, as I was growing up, and because I was born in 1960, a year divisible mm-hmm. by 10, and for some reason, mm-hmm. these kinds of numerical patterns are a big deal to me.
Yes.
I thought, oh, this is going to be easy to keep track, you know. In 1970, I'll be 10, and 80, I'll be 12, blah, blah, blah. And then I got my, you know, I started working. And then my first long-term job lasted 15 years. Pretty remarkable in broadcasting. And my, I thought my first and only marriage was going to last a lot longer than 15 years. So I'm thinking, okay, and if I find another person to have a relationship with, now I'm starting over again, working my way up that numerical ladder to 15 and then beyond. Well, I'm thankful that I'm now at 21, not a multiple of 10, but nonetheless. So another milestone. My second longest job is the one I'm at now. I've been here for 11 and so forth and so on. And so for me, getting divorced was a double-edged sword from the standpoint that not only was I not going to continue to go up that numerical ladder and kind of try to reach that level where my parents are now. They're, what is it? They're 64 years married this June 3rd of 2019. 64 years. They're in their 80s, mid to upper 80s. And it's remarkable. And, you know, and so that's what I wanted to achieve. I wanted to work towards it. And it's like starting over, you know, and so now I've got to live at least another 40 or 50 or more, because I don't know how much longer they're going to, they could go another 10, 20 years. and that's fine. That's terrific. I hope they do. But obviously it was a very painful thing too. But
yes,
one of the aspects that you talk about in this book that I alluded to a little bit has to do with the reason why I went through what I went through in that first relationship. And I didn't have a lot of girlfriends when I was growing up in high school. I didn't have anyone in grade school at all. Although I had a lot of crushes and made a lot of girls mad because I had crushes on them. I didn't have that kind of situation. And then, of course, I get into college and I'm now a young adult and I'm having relationships, but they're not long term. They're short lived. And, you know, and so, you know, I wonder how in the world did all of this happen? Why am I in this relationship now 15 years and all of a sudden it's fallen apart? What did I do wrong? You know, what I thought that I was a smart, intelligent guy and I could solve these problems and work through this stuff. And again, not knowing more details, certainly you can't really diagnose it. But let me ask you, from a general perspective, as you've done the study and research and so forth with your clients, what seems to be the block that causes people to continually get into those relationships that do not serve them or their partner, and then end up having to get out of them, and then they start up with another one that's like a carbon copy?
Yes. So let's get into that. So let me ask you a question about your first marriage. Can I ask you a question?
Absolutely.
That?
Yes.
Cool. So this is something that any of the listeners here can do as well, along with Richard. I do it with all my couples when I'm working with couples. And so on a scale of 1 to 10, Richard, throughout the 15 years or whenever the painful part started, on a scale of 1 to 10, how welcome with joy did you feel? 1 to 10. That she just totally welcomed you. Her face lit up. It was, good morning, handsome. And you woke up feeling like saying, good morning, gorgeous. 1 to 10.
I'm going to say 8. 7 to 8. Maybe 7.5.
7 to 8.
That's about a 7.5.
Okay. 1 to 10. Worthy and nourished to have your needs met. It's okay to reach out and expect them to come back with a congruent response that was attuned and aware of your unique needs.
That's a 5.
That's a 5. Yes. 1 to 10. How well did you feel cherished and protected? That meant you got to be a me. They valued the me in a protective way. They look, you know, that you knew you had backup, that, you know, you could be in a we. There was something between the two of you that was more than either one of you, and that they were there to support you. Cherished and protected.
I give that one a 7.
A 7. And then 1 to 10, how empowered with choice did you feel? And do along, if you're listening, go along and do this yourself. Mm-hmm. 1 to 10, that meant it is okay to create your own experience and co-create an experience with her. It was, and you had a voice. You had a right to speak up without criticism and contempt or stonewalling. 1 to 10.
I would say 9.
9. So the big thing was worthy. That was the missing thing. And if you if that's missing in a marriage, a right to have your needs met is probably. And if you go back earlier, probably that was the original template. That at one point in time, it wasn't so great to reach out for your needs, and that our brains in any relationship, when we have these missing feelings, it's probably because in an earlier relationship, or even and probably in childhood, that feeling was taken off the menu. That's the key. And at some point in time, for instance, let's just take the right to be in a we. You know, in the book, I talk about having a borderline mother. Mm-hmm. Now, she could be physically abusive, and that was putting it mildly. You didn't want to be a part of that we. So some part of me took the best deal available. If you wanted to get knocked against walls, you could be around my mother and try to be a part of that, you know, violent we. Or you could be separate and have your sanity and keep, you know.
Yeah.
That's the best. Now, later on in my marriage, I had no right. I had all right to separate and no right to belong. Not knowing that, it's not so much that my mother traveled with me in my marriage, but that template did. And so that safety thing that you don't, you know, it's not too safe being in belonging. And when I got in a marriage, there was some part of me that would separate. Oh, always by doing the academic, I'm just being a scholar, right? And at one point she says, I'm lonely and I don't understand because I truly love this woman. But some part of me is always making sure, remember to stay a little separate so you can, you know, you can be safe. And eventually it really plays havoc with the relationship, and I don't see it. It's old safety programming. The key in the book and is to go back and to find the exact moment that your brain didn't have a right to feel welcomed or worthy or cherished or empowered, whatever you're missing today, and to go back and find out what safety your brain was seeking, and then to allow your brain to be safe with that feeling. So with worthy, so that you can reach out for your needs, or if it's empowered, so you can have a voice. This is what changes future relationships, changing the original template, making it safe to have the original four feelings that all brains need to feel loved.
And what about those who have been through relationships? They begin this process. And I also like this aspect of it, too. You made reference to the rights, the six rights. The right to exist, to have your needs met, to separate and belong, as you've just been talking about, creating your own experience, assert your voice and choice, which is what we talk about all the time on this program, and love and be loved. How about this, where someone has been in a long-term relationship, they end up going their separate ways, they find other people, and they connect, and they have meaningful relationships. It all's good, all's well. They're not looking at, you know, dissolving that, because life is good. You know, yeah, we might have our, you know, little squabbles or this or that or the other, but we like being together. We like doing the things we're doing, and so on and so forth. You have the six rights. But you start looking back at that other relationship, and you start thinking about maybe the mistakes you made and the mistakes they made. And yet at the same time, you also start taking a look at those good times, those times that you really enjoyed being with that person and so forth. And you sometimes you feel as though you want to go back and fix it, you know, make amends maybe. And yet there would be some who would say, no, you've done that, close that chapter, the end, and just stay right where you are in the present moment, because you can't go back and fix it, because it's over. It's done. It would be like going back to an old employer who maybe fired you or you quit and you wanted to fix it. And it wasn't necessarily because you wanted to get back together with them, you know, although it's like the good times might have actually outweighed the bad times. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
In my relationship with my first wife, the first 10 years were actually really, really good. Then a shift or a change was made. And it was the next 5 years that I spent saying, look, I'm a smart and intelligent guy. I can make this work. I wasn't so smart or intelligent because after 5 years, I realized I couldn't. I wanted to. I really did. But obviously, here we are today. And now I'm in a wonderful, loving relationship. We go through a lot together. And it's quite remarkable how far we've come and what we've been through. I mean, my goodness. Yes, my first wife had her illnesses and so forth. We did some travel. My second wife faced death because she had cancer. She had an obstruction that could have killed her within hours. We've been to Ireland twice, and we've moved from Phoenix to Santa Barbara and so on and so on. Again, everybody's got these kinds of stories. But I sure as heck do not want to start over again. And it's one of those things where, okay, I am so committed to not starting over again that I'm going to do everything in my power to keep this relationship vital and alive and exciting and fun. And that doesn't necessarily mean that we're bouncing off the walls, you know, I'm 59. My wife is in her upper 60s. But still we're, you know, we have animals and we have a beautiful place where we live, and I could go on, but which I have already done, but it's just, you see where I'm coming from with this? Is that speaking from a position of regret?
It is a position of regret. And I think sometimes, I mean, we've all had those guilt things, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, at one of my son's Christmas parties a few years ago, my first wife and I have been divorced for a long, long time.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at a Christmas party, and Kenny is telling everybody that I've just finished writing this book. All the parents are there, right? And I'm looking at this look from my ex-wife that we've been, decades apart. And I can read the look still today, right? And I looked at her and said, I know, learned my lessons about 25 years too late.
Yeah.
Now, that didn't mean I would get back with her. But I wanted to acknowledge, yeah, I get there was a different man that showed back there. And the way that I look at it is, we were both dysfunctional. We both were two people that loved each other from dysfunctional parents. She had a different set of dysfunctional parents, and we did the best we could. And in all of this, Richard, I mean, our emotional attachment systems, because this is what I do as attachment theory, our emotional brain stays a constant 5 years old. And this is why when you hear couples fighting, people say they sounded like kids. Exactly. Mm-hmm. They are 5-year-olds and they're fighting desperately to protect their hurts. And every 4 or 5-year-old, I don't know what it is about human beings, but human beings seem to become preloaded with this idea that if they see pain, they want to make it better. There's always the 4 or 5-year-old, quasi-therapist who wants to save mom and dad. And the problem, of course, is when they realize that's above their pay grade by a few pay grades, then they go into plan B, which is I can't have it any better. Or if I can't have it any better, or perhaps even how can I have the same experience? Dear mom, dear dad, promise you I won't make you look bad. I'll have a divorce too. And what this does is, but it sets up this little hope structure way out in the future that one day I'll be big enough to make it right. And I think it's the ghost of all that somewhere, that there's some part of us that wishes we could be a savior when we're not. And we set up this hope that maybe one day, and then when you get in a later relationship after you, you know, it's been blown in an early one, we look back and I call it the phantom X, you know, and we send in. And what happens in that hope structure is we tend to more often than not idealize what happened or what could happen one way or the other. It's one. And then so it's about when you release that past pain, realizing that everybody did as good as possible. And for me, it's about realizing that I couldn't have done any better. I needed to learn my soul lessons, and I've given myself grace because it's those soul lessons that allowed me to write this book and to do the work that my clients love to do, because it forced me to ask the questions that were deeper than what most people were asking. So there's an upside to it, but you got to look at that 4-year-old savior and say, you know, it's okay to have it better, and to allow, and to say, I'm not a savior. That's there. That's up to there.
Yeah.
But saviors get rejected.
Yeah.
Does that make any sense?
It does indeed. There's that old biblical phrase. A prophet is not honored in his own home or hometown, if you will. It's an interesting dynamic, to say the least. Safe to Love Again is the title of the book. My guest is the author thereof, Safe to Love Again, How to Release the Pain of Past Relationships and Create the Love You Deserve. Gary Salyer is my guest, and we are talking about this work, and we're going to continue talking about this work. I remind you that if you are listening to the radio broadcast, go to the podcast. You're going to hear a lot more. So we encourage you to stay tuned. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, and we will be right back.
Tell me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host, and I thank you so much for being with us here on the broadcast and sharing our time here with Gary Salyer, and we're talking about Safe to Love Again. Gary, you know that we're going to have to talk about this because this is a part of the process with what's going on in the country as well as around the world today. I remember when I was scantily dating. I didn't have that many dates, and it's not a I'm not trying to be depressing or disparaging of self and the lack of companionship, because the relationships that I did have were very interesting. Although I was criticized by a therapist that my wife and my best friend suggested that I should go to, I was criticized by my therapist because when she asked me to name off all of my friends, most of them were female. Throughout the therapy session, and there were only 4 of them, she basically came to the conclusion, and her words, not mine. And isn't that interesting also? I don't know why I just picked up on it. My therapist was a female. So why is she being critical? But she said, I had character flaws. You know, and there was a part of me that's like, and who doesn't? You know, but I walked out on the 4th session. I said, bye-bye. And I never paid the bill because I didn't feel like she really did anything. My wife and my best friend said I needed to go to therapy because they said I had anger issues. That I was They said that I was depressed because I was angry a lot of time. I'd say it was frustration. Needless to say, we're dealing today in a world where we have high-profile individuals who have been misbehaving with the opposite sex. And apparently for men, it's, of course, a higher rate than it is for women as far as their misbehavior. Because I don't know what the stat is. I can't recall what the stat is for women. I don't know if it's 1 in 3, 1 in 4, 1 in 5. For men, it's, I think, 1 in 15 who are abused, are harassed, and so forth. It's 1 in 15. That's the statistic anyway. But we live in a culture today where you don't even want to look at the opposite sex, or if you're same sex oriented, because if you give the wrong look, you could be accused of the most vile, heinous, despicable allegations that could ruin your life. And so then I where I'm going with this is, you're talking about it being safe to love again, and I'm sitting here going, it doesn't seem like it, because there are all of these combatants out there with their shields up and their armor on and their weapons drawn, ready to destroy you if you so much as whatever. Can we throw that, because this is a little off the track as far as what you're talking about, but I think it still needs to be addressed. How do you look at that?
Well, you know, I think if we're looking at things like the Me Too movement, there were a lot of things that needed to be said that were long overdue. The statistics for women who have been molested or raped, self-report is 25%, and there's not a therapist in the world or a researcher that doesn't say you can just double that because it's self-reported. 50 to 60% of my clients who are women have been molested or raped. Now, and that's a huge, deep pain. And most of them just want to learn how to trust again. I can still remember one woman, her first session came in and she goes, excuse me for saying this. She goes, but I know I need to work with you because you're a man. And I think all men suck. And she goes on for about 10 minutes. And then she breaks down in tears, sobbing. She goes, Gary, my story is killing me. Help me get out of it. So I think these women are just, you know, they've got their wounds and they are legitimate. And now some people have gone to more, there have been some false accusations, but there have been many more women that have been silenced. And for the record, about 20% of men, from some statistics, suggest that they have been molested or raped many times by mothers. So it's not as high, but I have also dealt with those as well. I think the key here is, it really is, when I look at it, I go, it's not about, do I give a woman a wrong look? I go, I try to go more positive about that. And go, what's the way I can show up that can allow the most healing in the world? And to allow both these sides to, you know, to have a voice. And I do believe it is creating an adversarial relationship in some quarters, but I don't think most people are there. Richard, I think there are some, I think we are running from a fear. And if we cater to it, rather than try to really understand it, my whole thing is, you know, where is this fear coming from? I don't know that I have a full grasp on the whole societal thing, but I do know there's a lot of men who are scared of reaching out and, you know, approaching a woman. And there are just as many women who are afraid. And it's because we really have to drop into our hearts, stop making each other wrong, and say, how can we dialogue? How can I listen to that woman's pain? How can I listen to that man's fear that I'll be put into, you know, some sort of category that I'm not? And what's going on in society at the moment, we have a society that is laced with contempt. And not just criticism, but contempt. You go look on social media, how easy it is and anonymity to say horrible things, and what's going on the airwaves. Contempt from the top on down. And I can tell you that in couples research, contempt predicts the demise of a relationship within 7 years with 94% accuracy. That's the research of the Gottmans. Contempt is the acid rain of criticism. And we've got to stop coming from contempt and more just listening, and so that we understand the pain. When you're working with couples, you know, the goal is to get them to stop doing ping pong back and forth, just criticizing each other or defending, and to take 10 minutes, listen to the other side until the other side says yes. You understand me perfectly. No rebuttals, no persuasion, and then switch sides. Then the other side listens. If we could do this as a society, the scared men and the women who are tired of what they've been through, I think we could alleviate this where we could have real understanding replace fear. But it's going to take a mammoth change in how we view relationships. And at a societal level, this contempt, which creates nothing but anger and fear and defensiveness, and then all this sort of defensive posturing, this is not going to help us. So that's my answer. And I don't know if it's, I just know we've got to address the contempt and replace it with real dialogue and listening to each other. And that means both sides.
Well, I will say that the media doesn't help. In addition to the news media, the entertainment media does not help perpetuate that stereotype of a married couple as not a team, but as combatants. Someone's going to win. Even in comedy programs, the couples are trying, one's trying to win over the other. And I sit here, and my wife and I have talked about this, and I'm not speaking out of school here at all, because I'm going to keep it somewhat general, but it's like I have her back and she has mine. She was out of work, off of work for 2.5 weeks with the flu. And another subject to go into is the fact that it was the first year in 20 or 30 or 40 years that she ever got the flu shot, and she got the flu. But I took care of her through that entire, and it got a little strained at times for me, because I was doing the regular stuff that I always do around the place, you know, clean the cat boxes, feed the animals, and so forth, which she can do, you know, when she's well. But then I had to take care of her, and she wanted her comfort foods, and she needed these things and prescription drugs that I had to swing by and pick up, and on and on and on. But I did it because I knew that she needed it, that it would help her to get better, so that we could get back to some semblance of normalcy in our relationship. But you don't see that in the media in particular. You don't see those kinds of teams. I mean, aren't couples supposed to be a team working together? You know, and then you hear about these stories, these true stories of one of the members of the relationship having some secret other life somewhere after they die. You know, they die in a car accident or something, you know, and now all of the research begins, you know, to find out what happened. And you suddenly find out that they're living a secret life, you know, as a nuclear power plant operator. I didn't know you were that close to radiation. That's why we couldn't have kids and blah, 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 blah. Talk to us a little bit about this skewed view of relationships.
Okay, I will do that. And I want to say, and you did a great job of cherishing and protecting your wife. You know, that's cherished and protected right there. Got you back on. Yeah, you're sick for 2.5 weeks. I got you. You know, where's the roses and Robitussin?
Exactly. Or the violets and the Vicks. Exactly. How about the violets and the Vicks?
The violets and the Vicks. Exactly. I did. Yeah, I get that.
I like it.
Now, the funny, you know, yeah. And the lasting love is funny. I was buying TVs at, you know, like a Best Buy, and I was looking at a few, and there was a young lady beside me, and what was playing was the Kardashians, believe it or not. And one of the Kardashians is just giving it to this guy in a way that is, it was laced with contempt, it was laced with criticism, and it was the lousiest way to deal with this, but it made good TV drama. And this one said, that's what I want to do. And that's when I thought, oh no, if she uses this as her way of dealing with men, it's all over for her. You know, mm-hmm. Now this is what you see, especially in reality TV, because it's drama. It's exciting. You know, it gets into all those little, he said, she said. Now, the funny thing is, you know, when you look at couples that when, you know, the Gottmans did research for like 30 years, taking couples into a, what they called a love lab. It was basically a bed and breakfast with scientists on the other side of mirrors. And it was like any other bed and breakfast you'd ever been to, except for scientists on the other side of mirrors. Right. Mm-hmm. You know, and they observed the masters and the disasters. The disasters acted just like those folks on TV. Now, the problem is that when you're looking at the tapes, and I've looked at them, of the masters, they're calm. Because Lasting Love takes a calm brain. They're be honest with you, they're boring. When they know how to handle, in a rapport way, in a lasting way, in a calm way, these conflicts. Somebody gets in a conflict, and he goes, you know, you're right, honey. I could have done that a little differently, and I'll try better. I'm sorry about that. That's, you know, so the fact of the matter is that lasting love needs a calm brain. And in a lot of times, the giving of these four feelings, that's the whole thing I'm writing about in the book, welcomed with joy, worthy, cherished, and empowered, they're not the sexiest ways in real life, but they create lasting.
Yeah.
So there is a disjoint. And I really do wish, I mean, if I had the money to do what Oprah does, and I could have my own cable, I, you know, maybe I'd lose all my money, but I would love to have shows in which, yes, you know, how people actually should deal with it without getting into Brady Bunch stuff.
Yeah, you know,
we don't want to go back to that, but we into how people really deal with it. So, and there is that's what I tried to do in the book, is to give people the calm feelings that create lasting love and the skill set. If you have the rights to feel worthy and to make someone else worthy, and you have the skills, that's going to go a lot further than using contempt, criticism, defensiveness, or stonewalling. These make you feel unworthy and unwelcome.
Yeah.
It's all about how do we give these calm, lasting feelings. And to be honest with you, they're not that sexy for TV, but they're great for lasting.
The thing that really gets me from the male perspective, first of all, is when I was dating and the women that I did connect with, they were so damaged. And obviously there's an attraction part from my perspective, I guess, where I was looking to fix. So I would attract those that needed fixing. I mean, I'm not saying I was ever successful, but there was the scenario. They were so damaged that I would get so ashamed of being of the male of the species, because I knew that most likely it was a man who had damaged this woman because she was afraid and this and that and the other. And I do remember one experience that actually really helped me to realize that I didn't have to be, but I hadn't really clued in on it right away. There was one woman who lived in the apartment complex that I was living in at the time before my first marriage, when I was still single. I think I was 22, and I think we had gone out a couple of times, or we tried to, but we'd always talk in the apartment complex, sit around at the pool there. And one evening she came over and we just sat and talked for a while, and it was getting late. And again, she just lived upstairs and a few doors down, so she could have gone home. She laid down in my lap and she fell asleep. And there is no way in my mind, in my thinking, Gary, there's no way this woman would have done that if she'd been afraid of me.
Yes.
And so I thought, I guess I'm not so bad after all. I guess, you know, there is some hope for us yet. But I just felt like, will you guys stop it? You know, I would like to date a woman who is whole and confident and is smart and funny and all of those things, and beautiful on the inside as well as out. And this, I'm sure, is the same thing when it comes to women, whether it be because they're afraid of who might be out there, or maybe they are confident and whole and so forth and so on, and they keep attracting to them damaged men. What about those kinds of hurdles that we face in establishing long-term relationships? And I guess maybe back that up to that long-term aspect, is that really what we're all looking for? Is a long-term relationship in that regard that we can kind of count on? Because I came up with this phrase. I was thinking about this just this morning, that You've heard the phrase that the only constant in the universe is change. Well, I came up with a little rephrasing. Change is the only thing that doesn't change. if you want a constant, latch on to change because it never changes. It's always changing. I realize it's a paradox. It's a brain teaser, but I kind of like that. Anyway, talk to us about, first of all, long-term relationships. Is that what the human species in general is looking for, something they can count on? And then, of course, that other dynamic of damaged versus fixers, male and or female.
Yes. Well, about lasting, we know, this is, what I am an expert in attachment theory. We are born to have really well-attuned lasting relationships. And now if early on or in earlier relationships, some part of us got betrayed or we weren't, or we were abused or we were hurt, some part can pull back. That's called an avoidant love style. Now, sometimes those people will say, they'll make the story up. Oh, yeah, I don't need lasting love. Who needs it? But it's actually a pullback from our natural rights. Our natural right is we all deserve a lasting love. And it's because, and this goes back millions of years. I mean, if 50,000 years ago, if you lose your belonging and your lasting relationships, and they kick you out of the cave at 2 a.m, they have a new name for you, Richard. It's called old snacks because you became somebody's snack. So belonging and lifelong belonging and lasting are critical to the feeling of well-being and safety that we all need. And we only pull back when some earlier experience tells us it wasn't safe. Someone took away our right to love and be loved or to separate and belong. So that, the idea that we are fully self-actualized, no. If you think about it, every part of you you've gotten clues, tips, support, input, feedback, encouragement from others. Nobody forms a fully self-actualized self by themselves. In fact, the children that are put on themselves isolated the most are the ones that have the most critically damaged self-esteem. So we know it takes an enormous an experience to create a healthy, thriving human being. And as for, the other things you were talking about, there is, when people don't have that, they pull back, they game, they ghost, they play fear of missing out. One of the reasons why people are always pulling away from fear of missing out, they're really afraid of the intimacy that's in front of them. So they have this phantom next of who might be better. And it's a way of keeping them safe from belonging, being loved, because some parts said, remember the last time we were loved? So these people, and then that damages people, and then the next pays for the ex. And in the book, I have a chapter there on let's create a movement for love. Mm-hmm. One of the things we're going to have to do is start protecting each other's hearts. We must, an extraordinary single is someone who, if this is not the right person, calls and says, I think you're an extraordinary person, but maybe not the right person for me. And I want to let you know that I appreciate X and Y. And then, but I don't believe we could work out, and I wish you all the best. Someone who is, that doesn't just ghost and all these other. So we need to be cognizant, even if someone isn't the right one, if we're dating, that we protect their heart for the next one. And so somebody protects the next one that will be ours as well. This is what will create a society where it truly is safe to love. There is a bigger game here. And you're absolutely right. We need to make sure that we are protecting the hearts of everyone so that when they show up and Mr. Right does show up, they haven't been scared of love by what we've done. That's truly when we know we are supporting love in the universe.
This may sound like a strange analogy, but my wife has often, she's actually sort of trained me in a way to look at things, and say it would be better to take care of it than to let it become dilapidated and then have to replace it. We can always buy another one of those. It's no big deal. you know, the truck that we own right now, we just bought, and even the Volvo before that, before the accident. I got it washed every time I gassed it up because I felt that was part of maintenance. You know, I always felt the dirt was like sandpaper and you didn't want that in the joints. Oil lube and filter, we took care of whatever issues might have popped up. And, you know, in spite of the fact that, you know, it might have cost us a little bit here and there. And it was doing really well up until, again, as I say, the accident. And with the truck, the same thing. I'm just not taking anything to chance. And it's partly my father, too, who said, as long as you do the oil lube and filter on a regular basis, you know, you'll be making payments until it's paid off, and then you'll be good. And again, not to minimize a person to a thing, but the same thing I think is true in what you're saying, that if we will take care of those little things along the way, even if there comes that point when we have to say, hey, I just don't think this is working out for me. And you're terrific. I got to tell you that if I could just flip that other switch the other way, this would be terrific, but it's not flipping. And I need to go and I need to do some other things. And I really wish you well. And if you've taken care of that person and supported them and so forth, had their back and what have you, I would think that on the one hand, it might be easier for them to pick up and move forward into the next relationship. And at least you're not, I don't even want to use some of these words because we're talking about human beings here. But you're not leaving them in a state that's the next person who comes along in their life who might, be that next connection. They're not going to be inheriting the damaged goods syndrome, if you will. And that's really what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes, we're practicing kindness with each other, yeah. Richard. And it's vital important to do. You know, you mentioned something else, you know, about checking in and with relationships, fixing it before. And there's two things I'd like to say about that. One is, you know, you're absolutely right. These four feelings have to be attended to. Most men would never drive their cars the way they do their relationships, so to speak. I don't like the metaphor of driving, but you know, when their partner says, "Honey, you know, there's some things I really need," and they will tend to stonewall or ignore. Now, when we hear something, a little noise in the car, we go, "Man, we better take that in and have a mechanic look at that. We need to make work always checking the oil." But men, when they get in a relationship, says, "Let's just run that thing for 100,000 miles without an oil change." And what we need to do is focus on feelings. Men try to fix things. We're not fixing the relationship. We are feeling into it. What most men think is, how do I fix what's going on? Most of the time, if we just feel with the woman, that's the first wing, and that will fix it. And what we're looking for is how well, like I talk in the book, is how well did I make her feel worthy, welcomed, cherished, and empowered? And I always tell couples every week, have a check-in, like I did with you, 1 to 10. Honey, as your husband this week, how well did I make you feel welcome and joy? How well did I make you feel worthy to have your needs met, cherished and protected and part? And anything under 9, then the second question is, then what would have made it better for you? If you're doing that every week, that's like checking the oil, and you're focusing on feelings, and then you'll find out what events happen. That's what's going to fix it. That's what's going to keep lasting up and running. And you know, the book is meant to be a guide so that you know the your brain's natural path to lasting. And so if you just use it that way and do some checking, get some of the ideas from the book, you know, you'll have a lasting relationship far better. Now, yes, there can be some things like alignment for some people. I don't know that you can give four feelings of it, two people are totally not aligned. That's a different problem. But in any great relationship, you're always monitoring these feelings between each other. I do it in all of life. Mm-hmm. You got to train your brain in everything you do. Even when I go out to Starbucks or Whole Foods, I will make sure I see the name tag and say, "Tim, thank you for bagging my groceries today." I always welcome them with joy. "Good afternoon, Mary." So train your brain to give these feelings, and it will be, and then love is more natural.
Yeah.
And then it's lasting.
You said something earlier I wanted to touch on. You said that you were at a gathering and your ex-wife was there. And you had mentioned that you had written a book, or it was mentioned, about love and relationships that you had been in with, of course, your ex-wife. And that look that she gave you. And what was it? That look of, I've learned some things, and it took 25 years. Was that?
It was disappointment.
From her perspective, it was disappointment that it took you 25 years.
Yes.
Okay. Because there was something that was said to me by my ex-wife before I left. That she said, and there was a particular issue that we had been dealing with. She says, you do realize that you're going to take that issue into the next relationship. And, and I'm sitting here thinking, of course I am. Because whatever makes up my personality is I'm taking that with me. I'm not leaving anything behind. I can't. But what it did, and I have to say that over the subsequent first 5 years of my relationship with my present wife, we actually went through some stuff that I didn't even think about it consciously at the time that actually dealt with that very issue. And and I was able to move forward and beyond that. But I thought that was a really interesting and telling phrase, I think, of frustration on her part, my first wife. But here's the thing that I'm leaning to. You have this book, Safe to Love Again.
Mm-hmm.
You have this book that tells people how to release the pain of past relationships and create the love that you deserve. And what this is saying to me, and I tie this into the look that your wife gave you. Okay, on her part, it's disappointment because she doesn't get to benefit from the transformation that Gary has gone through. That it is a testament to the fact that we as human beings can change. Because there are people out there who say, no, you can't change the spots on a leopard or the stripes on a tiger. Always a liar. Once a liar, always a liar. And once a misogynist, always a misogynist. And of course, I always go to the educational theme. Well, then don't send your kids to school because that's the same thing. Mm-hmm. You're trying to educate them into thinking and da-da-da-da-da-da-da so that they can be more than they are today. More hopefully they can have more than what you had today and so on and so on. So either we can or we can't change. And that was to me the tell. Yeah, we can. And I think that's a big aspect of all of this, that we have to acknowledge that it is possible. Yeah, you may have been making the same mistakes for 10, 20, 30 years, but it doesn't have to be that way. And also, Gary, would you say it doesn't matter your age? I'm 59. I don't know how old you are, but my parents are in their 80s. And if one of them should pass and the other one wants to get into another relationship, go for it. It doesn't matter any of that.
I had a client that showed up. She was 74. And she said, and she had never been married. And she says, Gary, I'm lonely. And she had heard me speak many times in the previous 3 or 4 years. And she goes, I should have worked with you before, but I am so lonely. And she says, now I don't want to get married. I just would like to have some sort of relationship so I'm not lonely. That's not a lot of right to love and be loved. And it showed up, but she showed up and, she goes, and Gary, she goes, there's no man that's going to have me. I'm 74 years old. And I said, there's a lot of 74-year-old men, 75-year-old men that have been widows. And because they were in good relationships long, they know they deserve another relationship that's just as good because they have a full right to love and be loved. And they would love to meet a woman like you. So let's work on that. The first session, we worked on her feeling of, I don't have a right to love and be loved. It came from some issues with her father. And we worked on that and the feeling of worthy. And the very second session, she walks in, she goes, "So let me get this right. The reason I never got married is because I never had a full right to be loved." I didn't say it. She did. I go, exactly. The moment your brain, you do the deep work to give you back these rights, it starts taking it elsewhere. Cool thing was, a couple months later, she goes out with a guy, a few guys, and lo and behold, there's a guy 6 years younger that's interested in her. And then about a month later, I get this text message on a Saturday morning. You know, she's with a guy that, and she goes, I'm in Napa and we're really having fun. Suddenly there are men available because now she feels worthy. Yeah. And when she feels worthy, she attracts these men who want to feel worthy themselves. You know, there's the brain has neuroplasticity for a lifetime. That means you're built to adapt and be and to change. And I do know from working with many clients, I've literally had women in their 20s say there are no good men out there. I'm too old. I've had women in their 70s say there are no good men out there, or I'm too old. And you know, that's just a belief to protect them from pain, because the brain tends to delete possibilities for love when it has a template. I'm going to get hurt when I am in a relationship. So it starts deleting all the possibilities when you see them to keep you out of a relationship, and it builds in hopelessness. Hopelessness is a filter. It's a way of trying to protect your brain from future hurt. And if you can change the rights, do the deep work like I talk about in the book, and you can give your safety around love and feeling welcomed and all these other things, suddenly life feels differently and you start attracting differently and love shows up very differently. That's the key, doing the deep work so love can show up. You have a right for love to show up in a very different way. And when you have a right, it always does.
That's right. All right, so kids, a quick review. You have the right to exist, to have your needs met, to separate and belong, to create your own experience, and to assert your voice and choice, and to love and be loved. And that is from Safe to Love Again. And that has to do with how to release the pain of past relationships and create the love you deserve. And I think that that is a message that needs to be put out there. I have to tell you that, I've got to tie this in, because what I am noticing, I don't know about you, Gary, I've been through personal growth programs. You know, those 5-day intensives, you go Wednesday night, Thursday night, Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday, and you're in a room with a bunch of people, you do dyads, you do exercise, you do all these things. And one of the things that I've experienced, and I actually was very conscious of doing this in one of the early ones, I went through a program called LifeSpring back in the early 80s. It was akin to EST. And I remember looking around the room the first night, and it was usually, and I did this as I would go through different programs, and I would look around at the people that I wanted to associate with. By their appearance, I didn't know who they were, but, oh, there's an attractive guy. There's an attractive gal. I think I might have something in common with them. And so I would work early on to try to connect, you know, to try to have some kind of relationship, if you will, at some level. And then the people that I really didn't want to have anything to do with, I kind of stayed away from. The interesting irony in all of that has been, more times than not, that it's the second group of people that I usually had the strongest connection to by the end of the intensive. What I am finding in my personal life today with both people who are in my circle physically, but also who are in my circle that I hear about maybe through the media and that kind of stuff is, and especially for a long period of time, is I'm finding that same dynamic. I'm not a fan of POTUS, okay? But it has nothing to do with politics. It has to do with personality, okay? And yet I have gotten to a place in my life now after being exposed to this gentleman for now almost 4 years, okay, that my heart now goes out to this guy. I now I'm not in a place of name calling or any of this other stuff that a lot of people are into, and they're out there protesting with signs. I'm sitting back, and when I hear the words come out, I'm going, the only thing my friend, what are you afraid of? Where was the hurt so bad that you're expressing yourself this way? You know, that's where I'm at today. And he's the guy I didn't want to associate with at the beginning of the intensive. And here I am in the middle of the intensive, and I'm going, what's going on, man? What's going on? I don't care about your politics. I don't care how much money you've got. And I don't care what you look like. What happened in your childhood? It has to have been in the childhood or adolescence that has hurt you so badly that you're so afraid that you have to do these kinds of things. And, you know, some people say that, well, yeah, but you know, pitying someone, it's not really pity. I want to make sure I don't get into the fix it mode. Okay. Cause I can't fix anybody, but what I can do is I can change my perspective and attitude so that I'm not adding to the problem, you know?
Yes.
And like what you said earlier about how we can go through our relationship, and even if we come to the end of it and we've done all the good things throughout the relationship to support the other person and ourselves through those six rights, that maybe when it is all said and done and it's all over, we can at least separate amicably. And I'm thinking that that's where we need to go. And that's why I have you on the program to talk about this, because love isn't just the romantic, intimate kind of love between couples. It's between all of us, isn't it?
It is. It's as I write in the book, love is the operating system. How you, the templates, these rights for life and love that we get in 0 to 3, usually age is 0 to 3. They always work out in other ways. You see it in business. You see it in relationships. You know, attachment is all about the how we relate in a tuned fashion. And there's very little attunement coming out of Washington these days. Badly misattuned stuff. And then you have an anxious nation.
Yeah.
So if you have an avoidant government, you can almost, attachment knows that when someone's avoiding it increases the anxiety in the other person. All of this is predictable. Our attachment systems are working out at very large scales. And this is why I really do believe I'm on the side of trying to find secure love, because secure people listen. Yeah. They respond. They step into the mind of the other person, even if it's different. And they try to understand what is those fears and what's an attuned response. And it doesn't mean you can give everybody what they want, not in a democracy, certainly, you know. But we can have more dialogue and less contempt.
Yeah.
And we don't have to have this splitting into fractions in an ever differently smaller and smaller until we don't even have a nation state anymore.
And the interesting thing that you're...
Love is the answer.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, love is going... We're going to have to rediscover love here soon.
Yeah. And it doesn't matter how large the group is or small, the dynamics are exactly the same. And that's what I hear you saying.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, the templates are like, for instance, let's just show, you know, say you don't have a right to have your needs met, you won't reach out in a relationship. If you, I've seen this in all the women who have had businesses. If they don't have a right to reach out and have their needs met in a relationship, then they will inevitably in their business they will not charge their value. They will give away freebies. And it is the same missing right. If they don't have a right for a man to show up and be supported, like they don't have a right to truly belong, that, you know, they've got more right to separate, they won't hire staff. And so they're always overworked. Or if they do, they'll find staff that flake on them just like their boyfriends. I talk about this in the book. These templates we learn about love, these rights, the brain is wired to create all experience on the basis of attachment. That's why I say love is the operating system. So the fastest way to change your life in any area is to look at how your wire got brain for love and watch how it's playing out across. So the cookie cutter for love just gets bigger and bigger and bigger, and it's called Our Life.
Absolutely. My guest is Gary Salier, and GarySalier.com is the website, GarySalier.com. The book, Safe to Love Again. Again, how to release the pain of past relationships and create the love you deserve. Gary, I want to thank you so much for talking with us here in this program, for giving us so much time. I know that you have to move on to yet another interview and podcast, and I encourage you to do that a lot because we need to get the word out that it's not over, folks. It is not over by a long shot. We've got a long way to go, and we have so much work to do, and Gary is part of the process. And Gary, I want to thank you. Should you ever find yourself here in Santa Barbara, we'd love to have you in studio to talk more about this face-to-face. And also, I have three final questions for you, and then we're going to let you go. And again, my thanks for participating here on Tell Me Your Story. The first question is, who is Gary Salier?
I am a visionary. I am a visionary who has always been a little bit of a dreamer, and now I'm more of a pragmatist dreamer. But I'm a man with deep convictions and purpose, who is here to change a generation's fate with love. That's my purpose on this planet.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I truly would like to give people back a right to love. Because in the last 50 years, we've lost a way. It's not just the famed 50% divorce rate. It's the fact that millennials, well, they may not be divorced. They're getting, in 2 or 3 years, 4 or 5 breakups. And we know that neurologically speaking, it's got the same effect. So we are increasingly having a generation that's primed to experience heartbreak instead of lasting. And I truly believe that everybody deserves a love that lasts. And my job is to give people a roadmap, not back to just the way it was in the 60s, early 60s, when it was only 10% divorce, but this time, a 90% chance of making it, but in a much better, deeper, more intimate way. So we have the best of both worlds.
And finally, what is your life's purpose?
Well, my life purpose, I think I signed up for all these lessons, and I talk about it in the book at various places. I signed up for all the lessons to ask the questions, what truly allows us to restore a secure love style so we can have lasting and love that feels wonderful and good, and we can give it and receive it. So that's my big purpose in the world, is to be more and more loving myself and to teach others how to do that. And to be honest, I'm always growing, Richard. I'm always growing.
Gary Salier, thank you so much for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story. I can't tell you what a joy it's been to talk to you and to learn about how to have safe love again.
Yes, thank you.
Before we go, I want to remind you that I have a book. It's called Choices, 5 Steps for Life, and we encourage you to request a copy. Just send an email to tellmeyourstory. The email address is tmys@richarddugan.com, T-M-Y-S. And all you have to do is go to the PayPal link on the site and just pop in the donation for the book, and then I will send you via your email address the PDF of 5 Steps for Life. It's called Choices. I think that you'll enjoy it. I think it'll be inspiring as well. And we thank you so much for joining us here on Tell Me Your Story. Be sure to listen to the program on the podcasts. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to love.